Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
The Milwaukee Journal sent on Milwaukee Brewers podcast joins you on a Monday after probably the most eventful week of the Milwaukee Brewers season. This was a crazy one. It started with a gut-wrenching loss. There was a ridiculous victory over the Chicago Cubs on Saturday as Keston Hira's legend continued to grow. There were some big injuries. It was just a wild overall week, even though the Brewers only emerged with a 3-3 record after two home series against the Reds and Cubs. They hit the road for a West Coast road trip beginning on Tuesday, and we are here to chat about what is to come, including the trade deadline, which arrives on Wednesday. It is a big moment for the Milwaukee Brewers, who are still a game out of a playoff spot. A lot of teams in competition for that spot, and it's going to be require some roster upgrades more than likely for them to get over the hump. My name is J.R. Radcliffe, host of the Milwaukee Brewers Journal Sentinel podcast. I'll be joined shortly by Todd Rosiak, who of course is the Milwaukee Brewers beat reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. We will chat about the trade deadline and what's to come. The pitching situation is in a huge state of flux after injuries to not one, not two, but three starters in the rotation, including two of the injuries this past week. We'll also chat about that crazy showing from Keston Hira. He was National League Player of the Week last week, and then wound up with a moment that'll probably people will remember forever. A crazy walk-off home run to help beat the Cubs on Saturday night. So he had another good week. His 15-game hitting streak came to an end on Sunday, but he's awesome. Christian Yelich is awesome. His 16-game hitting streak continued on with an RBI double on Sunday. And there's a few other things to talk about. Travis Shaw is back with the big leagues. Jeremy Jeffress is really struggling. So we'll talk about all of that with Todd Rosiak. After that, we're going to talk to Keston Hira, the man himself. It was a short conversation I had with him early last week after he'd been named NL Player of the Week. But just chatted some big picture stuff with him, kind of where his sort of trademark swing comes from, where his Twitter handle comes from, and just chatting about his college days a little bit and getting to know Keston Hira a little bit. He, of course, was the top prospect in the Brewers organization. After my conversation with him, I have a chat with the newest top prospect in the Brewers organization. That would be Bryce Terang at High Advanced Single A Carolina right now. He is just a couple years. He was just drafted last year, out of high school now, and he is still developing. But he is the top prospect, a shortstop who has had a lot of success at the lower levels of the minors. You're going to hear his name come up here over the next couple days. He's probably their most attractive trade chip, if there is such a thing. And I'll talk about that with Todd too. I'm not convinced that the Brewers have a lot of trade chips, and I'm a little concerned with the shape of the trade deadline right now, that the Brewers are simply going to get outbid most of the way. But well, again, we'll talk about that in a minute. But Bryce Terang chatted with about his baseball story. His dad did play briefly in the major leagues, so kind of a cool story about an artifact he has from his dad's playing days that sort of helped inspire his own interest in baseball. And he's a great athlete. He was the National Freshman of the Year in high school. I didn't even know there was an award for that, but he was it. And so that's a heck of a way to kick off your high school career. No pressure, right? But he has lived up to that. He was the team's first-round draft pick in 2018, and still working his way up the ranks. Just finished a pretty successful stint with the Wisconsin Timber Rattlers in Appleton. So just a quick look back at the week. I got to say, I'm a little nervous here. This 3-3 week, you'd probably think of it in glowing terms because they did end up taking 2 of 3 from the Chicago Cubs. Both of those wins were thrillers. 2-run single by Ben Gamble in the 8th inning on Friday night tipped the scales in a 3-2 win. The Brewers go to extras against the Cubs on Saturday. A big double by Keston Hira tied the game. And then in extras, Albert Almora homers in the top of the 10th to give the Cubs a lead. Christian Yelich gets his 36th home run of the year in the bottom half to tie it right back up against their prized free agent acquisition, midseason acquisition, Craig Kimbrell. And then a couple batters later, after Tyler Saladino walks, I haven't even mentioned Tyler Saladino, who had that crazy grand slam on Monday, but he walks, and then up comes Keston Hira, who hits a low line drive opposite field off the bat that just keeps carrying, gets over that fence, a 2-run walk-off home run. Brewers win 5-3. It ended with a thud on Sunday, a clunker of a game that helped the Cubs win the series, but still the Brewers taking 2 of 3. So it feels like a good finish to the week. However, that Monday night loss was a tough one. I mean, they had to get Tyler Saladino's second grand slam in as many days to get back into that game. They take a lead with two outs in the ninth against Jeremy Jeffress. Eugenio Suarez hits a 2-run home run, and the Reds wind up winning that game. That was a tough one. That wasn't the game they should have won, so it isn't maybe as devastating a blow as giving up a big lead. But that was a tough, tough loss to absorb. They lose the next night before finally salvaging a game in the Reds series. So that was tough. The bigger loss, though, they've lost two starting pitchers this week. We talked about Brandon Woodruff last week on Monday's podcast. He had left Sunday's game and is out for what looks like the maximum amount of 6 weeks for an oblique strain. That is super damaging. No downplaying that one. And they then lose Yoli Chacin. He leaves Wednesday's start with a similar issue, an oblique strain, and it's unclear when he'll be back. I know people aren't going to think about that as a big loss because Yoli Chacin has truly, truly struggled this year. But one of the things we look at with this Brewers team is you had to think some of these guys that had been struggling would pick it up. And if this team goes to the playoffs, it's because you saw a return to form from players like Yoli Chacin and some of the bullpen guys. To not have him now means there's no chance of that happening. His rough season is basically just going to stay a rough season. We're not going to see him anymore, and let alone try to find a guy to take his place. I really thought Chacin was a bounce-back candidate. We haven't seen it, so again, it's not maybe feeling like that big a loss, but he was somebody that the Brewers really needed to get some bounce back from, and now they don't have that opportunity. And then Gio Gonzalez, not as significant an injury. It sounds like there's a chance he makes his next scheduled start, although it is unclear if that is going to happen. He leaves on Friday night after working into the seventh inning. That's a tough loss too. Gio has been hurt already this season, but he's obviously been effective when he's on. He's not an ace, but he is very effective, works quickly, gets the job done, got the job done even though he gave up a 2-run home run on Friday, kept his team in the game. Now he's out for an indeterminate amount of time. The Brewers are just positively running out of starting pitchers. Zach Davies had two really bad starts this week, gave up 13 runs over the course of two starts. And quite honestly, Zach Davies' numbers, peripherally speaking, are the same as they were last year. In fact, they're slightly worse than they were last year when you look at walks per game, walks per nine innings, strikeouts per nine innings, whip, FIP, which is sort of a projection type system, taking some fielding out of the equation. His ERA is what it is. You can't dispute that he's been better this year, but you also know that there's going to be games like that. He can't be. He's just the same pitcher he was last year. He's getting pretty fortuitous luck, and he was getting some big pitches, stranding a lot of runners earlier this year. That's usually not the type of thing that sustains itself. So you have to be a little concerned after back-to-back rough outings, knowing that he had four outings before that in a row where he gave up zero or one earned run. So it's not as if he was struggling for a long period of time. This could be just a blip on the radar, but the peripheral numbers say you can't really count on him to be flawless every time out. So that's a concern. It's basically just Chase Anderson after that, who's left in the starting rotation. You have to see what they do in the trade deadline. If they can pull in a pitcher, that'll help. But again, who do the Brewers have to give? Who do the Brewers have to offer that other teams can't compete with? We saw Marcus Stroman get traded to the Mets, the team that seemed like they're way out of it. And they pick up Marcus Stroman on Sunday. That was a big trade piece. A lot of teams are after him as a starting pitcher. If the Mets are in the mix, everybody's in the mix. And that's one less guy that some of these other teams are going to try to get to fortify their own rotation. The Brewers lacking those top-flight trade chips in the minor leagues. I just wonder if they've got what it takes to reel in a starting pitcher, especially now that they're desperate. They definitely need somebody. They just need a warm body, and they can furnish those. But they need somebody that they can count on here with so many injuries. And I just don't know if they're going to be able to pick that up with the assets they have, but maybe Todd Rosiak feels differently. So without further ado, sorry, I've talked your ear off. Let's actually get to the meat and potatoes here and chat with Todd Rosiak. Here he is, Todd Rosiak, Milwaukee Journal Sentinel beat reporter covering the Milwaukee Brewers. Todd, the big story of the week is the pitching situation. The starting pitchers are walking wounded at this point. They've got Brandon Woodruff and Yuli Chacin on the bench with an oblique injury. They've got Gio Gonzalez, whose next start is undetermined after he left with some shoulder issues on Friday night. They've got Zach Davies, who's had back-to-back really difficult starts. And Chase Anderson is the cheese standing alone. The trade deadline is obviously Wednesday. I'm sure the Brewers are trying to get pitching of any variety, but I don't know if they might be so deep at this point. I don't know if the trade deadline can save them from this issue that they've got. Do you think it's possible that they can get out of this with some new acquisitions, or like how do you think the Brewers are going to negotiate this?
I think I'm going to stick with my original prediction, which is I think the Brewers are going to target the bullpen. You know, I know a lot of teams like doing that this time of year, but to me, that makes the most sense at this point. You try to bolster the back end the best you can, and you play bullpen games like they did last year. Now, it becomes a little bit of a challenge to try to figure out who's actually going to start the games. Obviously, if you're not able to at least pick up one other body at this point, but if you can add, let's say, two veteran guys in that bullpen, guys that have done it before and guys that are proven commodities, all of a sudden the complexion changes a little bit, and Craig Counsell has more options. And you feel a little bit better about things, but it is crazy to go into the Oakland series with three TBAs. I don't think I've ever seen that before. Typically you'll get those, you know, at least on an off day before the series starts, but it truly sounds like we're not going to know until we get to the ballpark on Tuesday in Oakland, who Tuesday's starter is going to be, let alone Wednesday and Thursday. So, they're a really unique situation, probably unsettling situation for a lot of people, including the Brewers. But yeah, you can rest assured that David Stearns and company are working furiously behind the scenes, manning the phones.
So yes, I mean, obviously Adrian Hauser is a guy who will be a candidate maybe for that Tuesday start, but he showed again how great he is in the bullpen. I'm sure the Brewers don't want to, I mean, if they don't have to, they don't want to keep him in that starting role for long, but they've got other guys who could potentially at least start games and work maybe 3 to 4 innings. My bigger concern with bullpen or starting pitching, the assets to give. The Brewers, just in my mind, they don't have many. They've got their top prospect, Bryce Terang, is probably their best trade chip. Other than that, their minor league system is about depth. It's about guys at the lower levels. They don't have a lot of these flashy prospects. And with so many teams in the mix, we saw the Mets get Marcus Stroman. The Padres are in on Noah Syndergaard. I mean, literally every team in the National League except for three are in the mix for things. I don't know what the Brewers have to give. As you look around, am I underselling them? Do they have more assets than I give them credit for?
Well, I think you're underselling them a little bit, first of all. And second of all, if we hold to my prediction that they're going to add relievers, I think you can get away with pulling off trades like the Brewers did last year. You know, I'll point to the Joaquin Soria trade. They gave up Cody Medeiros. Okay, well, that's a former first-round pick. It's a guy who really kind of spun his wheels in the Brewers system. And it's a guy that, you know, for a team like the White Sox that had a veteran who wasn't going to be re-signing, you flip him, you basically it's a lottery pick, you know, lottery card. Scratch it off. Maybe it works out. Maybe it doesn't. Last time I checked, he was having a horrible year at AAA for the White Sox. So I think it's guys like that who the Brewers can flip potentially, maybe one, maybe two, depending on who you're getting, obviously. But for guys of that ilk, of the Joaquin Soria types. Now, that's not to say that they don't have some top shelf talent. You mentioned Bryce Terang. I'd be very surprised if the Brewers traded him. For me, a perfect sell high guy is Trent Grisham. I mean, the guy's killing it at AAA right now. What better time if you can get something for him that is going to add to the team this year, something proven, something that you know is going to help, flip him. I mean, that, to me, if I'm another team, I'm looking at this kid and thinking, geez, this guy's 22 years old. he's killing it at Triple A. He killed it at Double A in a very good league in the Southern League. That's something we can work with moving forward. Now, where he plays at the major league level remains to be seen. Is, you know, the Brewers, I think, still think he can play center field, whatever. But I mean, that's a piece right there, I think, that could interest teams. Look at the two guys that the Brewers just sent up to AAA this week, Trey Supach and Devin Williams. I think that if the Brewers don't trade either one of those guys, both of those guys could wind up in the bullpen at some point in September, if not earlier, depending on everything that happens. Corey Ray, former top 10 pick, you'd obviously be selling low on him, but maybe somebody believes in the potential that guy has. So, there's pieces in the minor league system. Granted, they're not the Keston Hiras of the world. They're not, top 100 type guys. But I think there's enough ammunition there to get trades done. Then the question becomes, looking ahead next year, what do the Brewers have in the minor leagues at that point? Well, that's a different question. But obviously, you're trying to stack up and try to get yourself in line for a postseason berth this year. So you work with what you got.
Yeah, Corey Ray, the minor league player of the year last year, has been beset by injuries a little bit. He, Grisham, they all have one thing in common. Supak's already on the 40-man, but you also mentioned Devin Williams. All three of those guys need to be added to the 40-man roster this offseason, or they risk losing them either to the Rule 5 draft or, in Devin Williams' case, to minor league free agency. So the Brewers might be more willing to part with those guys in the roster crunch of trying to find 40-man spots for everybody. So that's definitely something to keep an eye on. Here's a little bit of an offbeat concept. There was a headline that got a little bit of buzz on over the weekend that the Brewers would be willing to trade Mike Moustakas or Yasmani Grandal. There wasn't a lot of substance to that. I personally don't see any way they trade Grandal, since they have really no backup option at catcher anywhere in their organization, and he's just one of the best at his position. But Moustakas is interesting. Travis Shaw is back at third base. They have a couple other guys who could theoretically play third base. Now, they didn't have to give up a lot to get Mike Moustakas last year. They probably wouldn't get a lot for him. Is it possible they could think about moving him in exchange for a pitcher, a rental pitcher possibly, for somebody who's looking for some corner infield offense? Does that register at all with you?
It doesn't make any sense to me, because the only teams that would be interested in acquiring Moustakas would be another contending team. And what contending team is going to want to be moving starting pitching at this point? It just doesn't make sense on the surface. So, again, David Stearns and company are always exploring all options and all opportunities. And, I don't think anybody on that roster really is untouchable beyond the Yeliches and the Keston Hiras and the Josh Haders of the world. But to me, for what the Brewers are trying to accomplish and what they would be able to acquire for Mike Moustakas, the math doesn't compute for me. I don't see how that works.
The Brewers are not going to sell. They're a game out of the playoffs as play starts on Monday, and they obviously, Wednesday being the trade deadline, there's only one more game before that deadline hits. So they're going to be a buyer in some way, shape, or form. So like I said, Yasmani Grandal, he's going to be here. He's going to be in a Milwaukee jersey no matter what, in my opinion. What about re-signing him? Now, he's on a one-year deal. He was here to sort of recoup his value a little bit with the eyes on a multi-year deal this offseason. I imagine he's going to be too rich for Milwaukee's blood, but do you get any sense about what possibility Milwaukee has to bring him back next year, knowing what I just said? There's not a lot in this organization when it comes to catching depth, at least major league ready. Once you get to, Double-A, Single-A, there's a little bit more there, but what do you think the Brewers would they be able to entertain something like that?
I guess it just depends on what he's looking for. I would assume that he's looking to break the bank and sign a 4 or 5 year deal. To me, I would guess that's too rich for the Brewers' blood. But at the same time, if they like what he's done, and you look at what they have in the minor league system at this point, Jacob Nottingham is the furthest along as far as prospects go. He's trending as a career backup at this point, if he even stays at catcher. Next closest catching prospects are both at high A in Peyton Henry and Mario Feliciano, which means they're several years away from being contributors. So what do you do in the meantime? Do you try to get through with stopgap guys like Manny Pena? Do you bring him back for another year? It's very interesting. And if you make this, if you open this up even larger and you just go around the diamond at this point, you know, let's look at some other positions. You know, what is the team going to look like next year? Is Yasmani Grandal going to be back? It's probably unlikely. Is Mike Moustakas going to be back? Probably unlikely, because he's played well enough that he might be able to finally get that multi-year deal that he's been looking for. Who knows? Maybe the Brewers would be interested in bringing him back in a multi-year deal. Is Eric Thames going to be back? He's on a team option. I would term that probably unlikely at this point. So, you know, you've got, is Jesus Aguilar going to be back? Will the Brewers wind up trading him? There's a bunch of guys on this team that I think are interesting cases, and you know, you can make an argument, I guess, either way, whether or not they'll be back, but there could be some fairly substantial turnover with some of the big names on this roster. And you would think that if there is that kind of turnover, that the Brewers learned their lesson here this season, and they're going to try their best to try to stack up on the pitching side moving forward. Obviously they've got, you know, young arms like Corbin Burns and Freddie Peralta still in the mix, but the jury's out on them at this point. Obviously there's talent there, but can they put it all together? I don't think the Brewers are going to gamble again and assume that they can, because that experiment really blew up in their faces this season.
Yeah, definitely. The Brewers don't have a ton of depth in third base in their system either. Lucas Erceg is one of the top prospects who just hasn't had a very good year. They tend to draft guys up the middle and move them to third anyway, so that might not be quite accurate, but I think that they would probably have a better chance of re-signing Moustakas than Grandal, because he'll be cheaper and has a pretty good rapport now with the guys on this team, but who knows. But this is all part of the reason why they want Travis Shaw to get going, because Travis Shaw does play third base and could still theoretically be here next year and a couple years beyond that. He's back with the team this week. He came up, a little bit of a surprise that he came up when Yoli Chacin went on the injured list, but he really only got one game worth of action, has not gotten a hit yet. What is in the future for him? Is he going to go right back to AAA as they try to add some pitching here in the next week, or do you think he's up to stay? Like, what do you envision the plan is for Travis Shaw?
No, well, we got mixed messages on Friday when we talked to him. Travis Shaw said that he didn't really know. He didn't know what the expectations were, or what, you know, whether he would be here for the long haul. Craig Counsell was asked that same question, and he said that he informed Travis Shaw that the plan is to keep him up for the rest of the year. So, you know, I guess I would go with the manager and what he says. And if that's the case, then, you know, it's going to be interesting to see what they do as far as, you know, if he continues to spin his wheels and struggle, what do you know, is he just become strictly a bench option at that point? I don't know how you get a guy going when he's just riding the pine most of the time. But, you know, Travis Shaw seemed pretty encouraged by the results that he had over a more prolonged period of time in San Antonio. He had a lot more consistent hard contact, driving the ball over the fence, driving in runs, which is what we saw last year and the year before with the Brewers. So, you know, his versatility does help. It was interesting that on his first day back, they started him at first base. The guy does have the ability to start at first, second, and third, which is fairly unique. You know, I don't know necessarily that they want to use him at second now, with the way Hira is playing, and also the fact that Travis Shaw has not played at second base this year. But there is that versatility there. So I just think he kind of remains a wild card at this point. And, you know, certainly the Brewers hope that he can start driving the ball a little bit more consistently here at the major league level. And maybe if you get him on a little bit of a hot streak, then all of a sudden you've got another weapon offensively that can help you.
Yeah, Keston Hira, he made a tough defensive play that cost the Brewers on Sunday and saw his hitting streak end at 15 games, but he has obviously cemented himself at second base. A tremendous week when he was named National League Player of the Week since we last chatted, and he's followed it up with still more incredible baseball. He hits a walk-off home run on Saturday, a screamer that gets out in extra innings to beat the Cubs. He had tied the game with a double earlier. I mean, it's been a wild ride for Keston Hira. I don't think he's going to have any chance in the Rookie of the Year race with Pete Alonso, Mike Soroka, a couple other guys in there. Fernando Tatis Jr. probably is in the mix there. Do you feel that way as well? Is there any chance that this keeps up? He ends up in that Rookie of the Year conversation, even though he has only really have a half year when this is all said and done.
He doesn't have a chance. Like you, the guys you mentioned, especially the first two, Alonso and Soraka. you're looking at Alonso challenging Christian Yelich for the home run title. Cody Bellinger too, just having a tremendous year, all star year. In several other years and many other years, Keston here, I think, would be a legitimate candidate at this point, but there's just too much talent, I think, at this point, which is fine. I mean, Rookie of the Year is nice, but I think he and the Brewers both have bigger goals in the future, namely All-Stars, and who knows, maybe MVP awards for him. But there's really no way to oversell the impact he's had on the offense and just the impact that he's had just overall on the fan base, I think, on management. I think he's really just kind of surpassed everybody's expectations at this point. The guy's done it all. You mentioned the defense. Obviously, that's going to be the challenge over the long term, working on his range, working on his throwing. The good thing, I think, to me is that we've heard not one peep about his elbow. And that was just think about 2 years ago after he was drafted. Everybody was very nervous that, he was going to need Tommy John surgery and everything. We haven't heard anything about that at all. He missed the game the other day, and that was because of a sore quad, not because of an elbow thing. So to me, that's a huge positive. And it's just going to be a matter of him getting more reps defensively and getting more comfortable at that position. But he's hitting, he looks like a 10-year veteran at the plate already. I read Tom's piece about him and Christian Yelich forming a really good 1-2 punch for the Brewers in that lineup. And Andy Haynes had an interesting quote just about how he's already making it hard on pitchers and making pitchers work. And you're just assuming that he's going to put a good at bat together pretty much every time up. And that's a great way to put it. He does not look like a guy that's got under 200 plate appearances to his credit in the major leagues. And it's going to be really fun and interesting to watch him develop as time goes on. I mean, you go turn back a little bit. Certainly I don't think the Brewers have had a rookie make this kind of impact since Ryan Braun in 2007. And I think there's a lot of similarities there just with the confidence and the way he's driving the ball and all that. And if they have another Ryan Braun on their hands, they're doing pretty well with Keston Hira.
Yeah, and he just hits the ball so hard. I cannot believe how his hands are just so quick through the zone, and he's able to just poke balls down the baselines at high velocity and, push balls past outfielders. It's crazy. It's how you get low-line drives that turn into home runs. And that 1-2 punch, you can read about that article that he's talking about at jsonline.com from Tom Haudricourt. And as Christian Yelich goes, I always feel like we don't talk about him enough because he's just assumed greatness, It just happens. His hitting streak continued on Sunday. It's up to 16 games. He leads the league in home runs by two. He's 2 points up in the batting race on Jeff McNeil of the Mets. So he's in first place in both of those categories, and he's now third place, tied for third in the NL in RBIs as well. This came up a little bit last year when he got into the Triple Crown race at the very end of the season. He was red hot at the end of the season and almost snuck into Triple Crown standing. I think he ended up only leading the league in batting average and not the other two categories. But what would that mean to you? We've lost a little bit of juice on the Triple Crown as those stats, particularly RBIs and batting average, have become a little bit less meaningful. What would that be like, though, covering a guy with the Triple Crown? You think people would still be into that down the stretch?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's just another fun storyline to follow. It was incredibly fun watching that last week play out last year and then in that Detroit series. It was a little bit surreal going into that final game of the regular season on Sunday, wondering, is he going to do it? And watching what was happening in the other games and all that. It's he's a superlative talent, obviously, and he had that quote the other day about the regression thing again. It's clear he still has a chip on his shoulder about people questioning whether he was going to carry over last year into this year. And certainly there's been no slowing down. He's over, not far over that calendar year hump, from when he started after the last All-Star game. The numbers are just phenomenal. And, you know, it's almost easy to, you kind of almost take for granted that you plug him in the lineup. He's going to have a couple hits for you. It seems like the homers have been coming a little bit more in bunches. You know, he had that one obviously yesterday in the 10th inning to start that rally to beat the Cubs. But it's going to be interesting. He's now at his 2018 home run total with 2 months to go in the season. It's going to be fun to see where he winds up. I mean, you just assume with the way the ball is flying, 2 months to go, 10, 12, 15 more for him. I mean, that's certainly within the realm of possibility, isn't it? And that's going to be fun to watch. You know, Alonso's been killing it. Bellinger, he's never out of it either. So just a lot of fun, interesting things to follow. And it's only going to be more fun if the Brewers are able to stay in this race and if the Central winds up going down the stretch, you know, as a three-team race the way it is right now.
Might be my front runner for quote of the year right now. I guess that regression didn't happen when asked about his 36th home run to match his total from last year. I keep up at jsonline.com where he stands after X number of games, however many games the Brewers have played versus some of the other big home run seasons in recent and historical memory. And that those 50 home runs by Prince Fielder squarely in the crosshairs. Christian Yelich still on track to hit 54 homers, and that's even with a little bit, I guess you could call a homer slump over the last couple weeks, but of course, he hits a big one on Saturday to tie the game in the 10th. He is phenomenal. And another guy who came up big over the weekend was Ben Gamel. He had a two-run single on Friday night that tipped the scales. He homered in that comeback on Saturday night. You know, you go back and look at that Domingo Santana trade, the trade that the Brewers acquired Gamel from the Seattle Mariners, basically in exchange for Domingo Santana. And Santana's been good. He's got an 807 OPS, 19 home runs. He does lead the league in strikeouts with 134. He's been streaky. Gamel is a little bit lower OPS at 735, and he's not going to hit, obviously, for a ton of power, but gets on base almost the exact same amount, and of course, he has that glove. He can play center field. He's a quality outfielder, whereas Domingo Santana is regarded as maybe one of the poorest outfielders in baseball. So as you look back at that trade, I feel like both sides kind of got something out of that, but the more this goes on, the more I start to feel like I think the Brewers came out pretty ahead here. Ben Gamel's been a heck of an addition.
Yeah, I think it's a win-win for both teams. The Mariners got an everyday right fielder who's got some power, who's young and controllable, and some Brewers fans, even to this day, like to argue on Twitter with me. I know it's hard to believe, but you know, the Brewers shouldn't have given up Domingo Santana. Where was Domingo Santana going to play? He's not going to be playing in front of Christian Yelich. He's not going to be playing in front of Ryan Braun if you move Yelich to left. There was no place for him to play. Granted, he was good hitting off the bench when he came back up from Colorado Springs last year, but that's not a role I think that suits Domingo Santana for the course of the season. So the Brewers moved him on. They brought in a guy in Ben Gamel who had an option remaining, who's a left-handed bat off the bench, who's fast, he can hit for some average, can hit for some power, and most importantly, can play all three outfield positions and is a plus defender. And I think the thing that you couldn't really gauge when you traded for him, but you can tell now, is the guy's clutch too. I mean, that home run in the 10th inning in Atlanta in May, the home run against the Cubs last night, the two-run single against the Cubs on Friday night. He's just come up big in big circumstances for the Brewers, and he's been exactly what they need. He can steal a base when you need him to. He's just a really good ball player all the way around, and he's been a perfect fit for the Brewers. So I think it's one of those trades, like I said, where that's helped both teams. And don't forget, I don't think we can undersell the fact that the Brewers did get a pitching prospect along mm-hmm. with Ben Gamel, Noah Zavolas, who's having a really good year at Carolina this year. So those kind of additions sometimes fly under the radar. You forget about him because these guys are lower level in the minor leagues, but you know, sometimes they pan out. Remember the three pitchers the Brewers got for Adam Lind from the Mariners? One of those guys turned out to be Freddie Peralta. Remember the Keon Broxton trade? We got a guy, the Brewers got a guy named Trey Supach along in that trade, and that guy's a step away from the major leagues now. So that's another thing to keep in mind. Aside from Ben Gamel, is keep an eye on Noah Zavolas in the coming years. That guy could factor in in a few years as well. And you can never have enough arms, as we've learned over the course of many years following this team.
And certainly this year, among those years, we're learning that message. And I'll leave you with this last question, checking in with one of those arms. It's been a rough go for Jeremy Jeffress. He's really been up and down a little bit, but this was a rough week. The home run he allowed last Monday against Suarez with two outs in the ninth kept the Brewers from just what would have been a hugely uplifting win with Tyler Saladino's second grand slam in as many days. And then he gave up a home run again on Sunday, his first appearance since that outing. It was wasn't a high leverage situation, but it did put the game pretty much out of reach, a 3-run homer to Victor Caratini after there have been two outs and nobody on. We've checked in on him a couple times before. I still think he's probably battling an injury of some kind, but I think he's still a guy you have to have on the roster. I don't think they can, at this point, they can't afford to lose him. Where are you at with him? What do you see when you're watching Jeremy Jeffress work?
I agree. I think he still can be a valuable member in the bullpen, but he certainly caught lightning in a bottle in 2018. Everything came together for him. First All-Star appearance just was fabulous up until the postseason. And ever since then, it's been a struggle and got off on the wrong foot this year. Missed that first month with the shoulder weakness. And he's gotten the velocities back, but he's really kind of changed the way he's pitching and his repertoire. And it's very interesting. And what he brings to the table now, I just don't think that Craig Counsell has quite the confidence in him to be pitching him in high leverage situations at this point. I think we've already seen that, you know, Freddie Peralta and the few opportunities that he's had, you know, the high 90s fastball, that's where his repertoire works. You know, when you can get at high 90s, two pitches will work for you. You know, Jeremy Jeffress typically is going to sit around 93, 94. He can get it up to 96, but for whatever reason, has just struggled keeping it together this year. And you know, maybe they can catch lightning in a bottle with him coming down the stretch, and he can kind of regain that groove a little bit. But you know, 2018 is looking right now like that's kind of been the high point of his career. And you know, at his age and everything, it's looking more and more like he could be another one of those guys that will not be back in the mix next year. He does have a team option, but his salary would go up quite a bit. And I would think that the Brewers might be looking at other options at that point.
Todd Rosiak, Milwaukee Journal Sentinel beat reporter. Find everything he has at jsonline.com. Todd, I think that means we'll chat with you again next week, unless there's reason for an emergency podcast midweek. I know you would love it if I came calling on Wednesday after the Brewers acquired a big name, huh?
Yeah, sure.
We will probably chat with you again in 7 days or more, but appreciate you joining us, Todd. We'll talk to you very soon.
All right, JR.
All right, thanks to Todd for joining us. We now move to my conversation with Keston Hiura. It was brief, little behind the curtain. It was kind of awkward, too, but not necessarily me talking to him. But this was on Monday, right after he'd been named Major League or National League Player of the Week. He was the first Brewers rookie to ever win that award. And I walked into the clubhouse right as it opened. He was sitting right there by his locker. I chatted him up. And everybody else from all the other media outlets obviously wanted to talk to him, too. They start trickling in. They're basically gathered around waiting for me to be done with, I felt guilty about it, my sort of just random podcast questions. You know, nothing about the moment, the Monday news cycle. So I felt like I was kind of being watched. It was a little weird. But hopefully that does not come through and you can hear a pretty normal chat with this guy, Keston Hiura, who is making a name for himself. Really, it just calls to mind what back to in 2007 when Ryan Braun came up and had the best rookie season that any Brewers player has ever had. He, of course, won Rookie of the Year. Keston Hiura is probably not going to do that with Pete Alonso, particularly in the mix with the New York Mets. He's been here all year and has 34 home runs. I mean, that guy's been awesome. Mike Soroka of the Atlanta Braves, 21-year-old pitcher, is also in the mix. There's probably a couple others even that are ahead of Hiura at this point, because he hasn't had the playing time, but he is putting up a season that is in the mix of one of the best rookie seasons in Brewers history. You can find my article on that at jsonline.com and hear all about the different rookie seasons that I guess you could consider the best offensive rookie seasons in Brewers history. Jesus Aguilar, actually, has a pretty good one 2 years ago when he was still a rookie, technically, by letter of the law. That was his rookie season, and he had a good one. But there are a bunch of guys listed. Pat Listash is mentioned. Of course, he was rookie of the year in 1992. We were talking about him when Keston Hira's hitting streak ended up just short of Listash's for the most among rookies in franchise history. So you can check that out. Here he is, Keston Hira, chatting with me before a game last week.
My guest is Brewers second baseman Keston Hira. He is the now reigning National League Player of the Week after his monster four games in Arizona. So Keston, I know that you've had a lot of experience with coming up through the system at this point, but I don't know if there's any preparation for the fixation that Brewers fans have had with you as the top prospect coming up through the organization. There was obviously a big to-do when you went back down to the minors. And what do you think when you see the reaction to that, the way that fans sort of, you know, rally to your, you know, are excited about you, that sort of thing? Like, how do you deal with that?
I mean, obviously, it's always exciting when you have, you know, people, you know, falling in your career, falling you or not. But, ever since I got drafted by the Brewers, I felt the love for the fans. And then I think that's what, you know, pushes a lot of people on this team to, you know, to play better, do better, get those wins. There's a great fan base out here in Milwaukee, and we enjoy playing here at Miller Park. And being able to do that on a, you know, regular basis.
What does it mean to have a huge Southern California presence on this team? I don't know if you'd run into those guys prior to this, but I mean, it's kind of be nice to have guys from your neighborhood, sort of.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of people grew up within an hour from me. So obviously, it's cool to have some of that California love over here in Milwaukee, and being able to, you know, connect, you know, certain past points in our lives where, you know, being in the same place at the same time at some point or whatnot, or being able to experience stuff growing up. I mean, it's definitely cool to, you know, have some of them on the team. You know, a lot of baseballs, good baseballs out in California, yeah. A lot of prospects coming out of there, and a lot of talent. So it was definitely a baseball hub for, you know, a lot of people out there.
You know, it's not like you struggled in your first year in college, so I'm kind of curious, why weren't you drafted out of high school? Like, what happened between 12th grade and college? Or, like, you know, how do you explain that, I guess?
I wasn't heavily recruited. I wasn't the biggest guy. I wasn't the strongest guy. Nothing really, like, you know, popped out. So I think, you know, at that point, you know, it didn't really matter for me. For me, you know, at the high school level, it was about getting to the next level, which is college, yeah. College ball, and then from college baseball to, you know, professional baseball. So I think just being able to keep that, you know, level headed, to, you know, challenge myself to just get to that next step, is what kept me going.
You won the national batting title. Were you following other guys around the country? I mean, I don't know if you even could at that point, but were you checking in on guys to see where you ranked in terms of batting
average
or anything like that?
No, not at all. I mean, you just go out there, you know, play as hard as you can, do whatever you can to, you know, have the team win. And you know, at the end of the week, if you know, haven't won it, you know, so be it. But
Your swing kind of gets a lot of attention as being fairly unique. Did you model it after anybody, or who were the people that sort of helped you develop that as you were coming up?
No. I mean, there's no one that I really kind of like examined or analyzed anyone's swing, really. But I've had the same hitting coach since I was a young kid, and just over the years, being able to understand not only my swing but the game in general, that really helped. Just being able to develop that way. And you know, obviously, as I got older, stronger, smarter, everything kind of just came into place.
Who has been your hitting coach?
His name's Sean Thompson.
Okay. He's somebody in high school you picked up? Or
before that.
Like, oh, even before that? Well,
like nine.
Oh, dang.
Yeah.
Cool. He must have, I mean, did he give you any videos or any guys to follow at all?
No. Just sort of. And it was just more of just being able to talk about the game and understand what to do in certain situations, how pitchers can pitch you and whatnot. It was just analyzing the game that way versus players.
So last couple of questions, you majored in economics in college. What would you have done if baseball hadn't worked out?
I mean, for me, I always felt like you know, the business world is very big, and you know, whatever opportunity would present itself, there wasn't anything I was really striving for.
Yeah.
You know, working towards, it was more of just being able to have the opportunity to explore different options. You know, if that time came.
Yeah. What is the Twitter handle, Kestaddy? Where does that come from? Where does that stem from?
I don't know. It was just
an idea.
High school's kind of a name that just kind of came up. So. Nothing really special behind it.
Out with the old, in with the new, because Keston Hira is now off of all of the Brewers' prospect lists, all the midseason updates. Keston Hira is off of them because he's played too much Major League Baseball. He is officially a big leaguer. He's not going back anytime soon. He's probably the second best player offensively right now that this team has. So he's not going anywhere. But now Bryce Terang rises to the top of that list. He's a guy that was drafted in 2018, a high school product who was thinking about going to LSU. It was very close at the deadline. He finally did end up signing with the Brewers, and he's been in their system and performing well. Shortstop, would love to stay there, as I asked him. He'd love to stay at shortstop or middle infield in some capacity. That's where he wants to be. And he is now at Advanced Class A, Carolina Mudcats, trying to keep moving up the ladder. He's a guy that's still a couple years away, of course, from being in the big leagues, but you're going to hear his name as the trade deadline approaches. He's probably the best trade chip the Brewers have. They've got, obviously, other guys in the minors, but they don't really have that high level. Those guys in AA and AAA that are knocking on the door. Bryce Terang is probably the closest closest blue chipper they have. So this is I thought this would be interesting chatting with him before the trade deadline. Hopefully he's still here on the other side of it. But if not, you got to know him a little bit. Here's my conversation with Bryce Terang. My guest is Bryce Terang, top prospect in the Milwaukee Brewers organization. He's with the Carolina Mudcats in advanced single A as we speak. And Bryce, thanks for joining us, man. I am curious, going back to high school, was noticing that you were the Max Preps National Freshman of the Year. And I was curious, going back, what that experience was like for you. Because I'm imagining a 14-year-old kid being told he's one of the best, if not the best in the country. That's kind of a heady thing for a 14-year-old. So, like, how did you stay grounded after that? I mean, what did that do for you? What was that experience like?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I had a really good year my freshman year. It just so happened to work out that I got that award. That year I also won the Dick Case Player Award for USA Baseball. It was cool. It was it's always good to win awards and stuff. But it just made me want to work harder. And at that time, I didn't really know exactly what. Like, I knew what the award was, but I didn't really, like, kick in until I was a lot older. Like, damn, that was a pretty good award. But honestly, it just made me want to work harder and keep working every day and keep getting better.
Was it tough having that? Because now for the next 3 years of your high school career, people are going to remember that. That's not something that people are just going to not notice. Was it tough because you weren't – I mean, it's almost impossible to match the numbers you had that first year.
Yeah, that first year – was an unbelievable year. I had a really good year. Yeah, I had to look past it and just keep doing my thing. And it's almost like I can't expect to have another year like that. I always pushed to get better and was happy that I had a good year like that, you know, freshman year. But you can't look at numbers of what you did in the past. You got to look at what you're doing now. I continued to work and I continued to get better. And I guess you could say it was a good year and I just continued to work. And
sure,
that's past. All my high school career is over now. And now it's on to taking it day by day here. Right. So
you were committed committed to LSU and obviously you get drafted in the first round. What was that time period like between getting drafted and then the signing? Because it came up like a lot of these signings do, right before the deadline, before it was clear you were going to sign with the Brewers. Was that a stressful time? Were you just letting other people handle that part of it? How would you describe that time period for you?
It was very stressful. The thing is with me is the only way I could get it off my mind is going to hang out with my friends, going to do stuff I enjoy. I went to the lake. I hung out with my family. I talked to my dad a lot, trying to figure out what it was, what the best plan for me was. I also thought to myself what the best plan for me was too as well. It was a stressful time, but I mean, it's something, no matter what I would have chosen, I mean, I would have been happy with whatever. I'm excited and happy I chose this one. I love playing pro ball and I can't look back on it now. Like I said before, it's over and done with. I can't have any regrets on what I did. I did what I wanted to do, and I'm happy I'm here.
So you mentioned your dad. He, as I'm sure a lot of people know, played a little Major League Baseball with the Seattle Mariners, drafted by the Brewers.
And your mom is a great softball player. I know your sisters are great athletes as well. I know his career was over before you were even born, but what sort of awareness did you have of his baseball career when you were growing up? Is there like memorabilia around the house or anything like that?
Yeah, so I mean, he has baseball cards. He had, he always would go to games and he would know people playing in the games when I was younger. But I think the biggest thing to me, which I still sometimes wish I can go back and find it, back in the day when we had the VHS tapes and stuff like that, he had one of him hitting, and it was just all of his hits in the big leagues. It was pretty long, and I used to go into my room, plug it into my VCR, and I would sit in my room and watch him hit and stuff. So I think that's my favorite thing, is to go back and watch how he hit on, and it was a side angle, so you can't see what pitches were coming, but just all of his hits and stuff. And he would sometimes sit in the room and he can recall like, oh, that was against so-and-so, that was there, that, you know? And so
that's incredible.
That's my favorite memory of him playing baseball was him. And obviously he knows a lot because he's been there and done it. So he's helped me out, mentally getting prepared and, obviously hitting wise and stuff like that. And just, it's been awesome.
You had a moment in the Cactus League here. You obviously started your pro career then last year, and then this year you get into the Cactus League and you had kind of a nice little appearance. You made a nice defensive play. You got a hit. What did that experience do for you? Was that I don't know if you need a confidence boost, but was that what that was? How do you look back on that?
Like going to the big league games or spring training in general?
Yeah. Getting into one of the big league games at the Cactus League.
Yeah. I mean, it was an awesome experience. Just even hanging around with the guys, talking to them, seeing the guys in the weight room and stuff. And I mean, it's just an experience that you got to take and ask questions, get better, learn from those guys. And so, yeah, it was a blast. I had a lot of fun.
How about the Midwest League? Because the Midwest League All-Star Game, you got to lead off in the Midwest League All-Star Game. You got a double in there. What was that experience like?
Yeah, that was also fun. I mean, I was playing with guys that I played with when I was in high school. For like Nolan Gorman was there, Blaze Alexander.
Yeah.
It was awesome that I got to play with a couple of my teammates too. Alec Thomas was there. There was a bunch of guys that I played with when I was there. It was a blast. I mean, I actually got to become better friends with some of these guys. Buddy Kennedy, I mean, we were always friends on the field, but I never really talked to him off the field. I got a chance to talk to him, hang out with him. And it just made our relationship even better. So
awesome.
It's cool, man. You're always getting to know other people. You're getting to experience things. And just, yeah, it was a blast.
So now you, like I mentioned before, you're at Carolina. You were in Wisconsin. And I'm kind of curious how you view the adjustments between the two levels and how it's different at Advanced Class A. And I think you're on a bit of a hitting streak right now, so obviously you're starting to get things figured out pretty quickly. But also just being at Wisconsin and being surrounded by other Brewers fans had to be kind of interesting too, because you have people telling you what they're looking forward to. Maybe you don't get that at Carolina, but now you've got a different skill set. Well, just can you kind of talk about the jump to Carolina and how it's been different?
Different team. Like, it's the same. It's the Milwaukee Brewers, but different team. You know, I'm playing with a whole nother group of guys. So that was a jump for me, getting to know more of these guys out here in Carolina. My roommate, Aaron Ashby, was up here. And so I went in here and I knew him. I mean, the thing is, you know everybody here, but you don't really know them because just know them in spring training, and that's really about it. But after I came up here, these guys are great too, as well as down in Appleton. I enjoyed playing in Appleton, and I enjoy playing here right now. It's been fun, and I mean, there's nothing really I can complain about.
Do you envision, if you picture yourself as a big leaguer, do you feel like shortstop is the place where you'd be? Are you comfortable at other spots on the field too, or is that kind of where you have your heart set?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, I'd love to play shortstop. You know, whatever's going to get me to the big leagues is where I want to play. You know, if they told me I had to catch, I'm going to go catch.
I don't think they're going to do that, Bryce.
I'm just saying, though, in general, whatever spot gets me there. But yeah, I'd love to stay at short. I'd love to be in the the middle infield. That's where I want to play. That's where I see see my future and keep getting better defensively and also offensively.
The obviously this time of year is trade season, and that goes for the major leagues, but then minor leagues too. There's always, anytime you have you're in a top prospect list, you're probably going to get mentioned somewhere along the way. This will be the first year you've had to deal with that. Are you getting texts from your buddies who are following the MLB rumors? Are you thinking about it? I mean, how do you manage that? I know you got a lot of games to sort of take your mind off it, but how does that come into play for you?
Yes, I mean, life in general is a lot of what ifs. You know, and it's tough to not look at the what ifs, but for me, it's just I gotta keep playing. I gotta keep going. I mean, what if I get traded? What if I don't get traded? You know, there's a lot of what ifs in this, and just in life in general. And for me, I just want to take it day by day. I never know what's gonna happen. I'm just blessed to be here, play this sport. I love where I'm at. I like it here. I mean, whatever they want to do is what they want to do. But yeah, I really, it's tough not to look at, but at the same time, it's like, you know, I got to take it day by day. I'm going to keep working. I'm going to keep getting better for myself. Cause at the end of the day, my main goal is to be in the big leagues and stay there for a while, you know? So I just want to play baseball and I love playing this game, and no matter with whom it's with, that's my goal. And so, I can't really look at the trade deadlines. I mean, I'm just going to play and just continue to play day by day.
All right, last question. Obviously, baseball takes up a lot of your life, and you've got a lot of sports in your family, but can you give me a sense of what you're into outside of baseball? What two or three things are sort of, you know, your outside sport passions or what,
yeah,
you know,
so
what you're into?
I'm not a big video game guy, but when I do play video games, I usually play baseball or basketball or hockey. So I'm always in some sort of sports, no matter if it's on the field or off the field. We have a ping pong table in the clubhouse. I'll play ping pong. I love playing ping pong. I just love competing in anything. If we go bowling, I'll go bowling. Laser tag, I'll go play laser tag. Arcade games, I'll go play. I just like to have fun, man. A lot of these things just to get the mind right, competing every day, and, you know, just it's always fun. I like going out and doing other things, even if it's going to catch dinner and hang out with the guys and talk. And I'm a very active person. I don't like going home and sitting there and not doing very much. Playing the sport, you learn how your body feels. If your body feels good, yeah, maybe you go out and bowl a couple games, or you sit inside and play video games. I don't know. I've learned to play video games and just have fun with it and play with my buddies online. And I also spend a lot of my time talking to my family, my sisters, and my mom and dad. So I take more interest in checking up my sisters, making sure how they're doing, than I take interest in video games.
All right. Thank you so much, Bryce Turang,
yeah.
Brewers top prospect. Thanks for joining us, man. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you.
Finally, that's what we got for you. It was a long one, a long podcast, because, hey, the trade deadline's a big deal, and it is routinely a big moment for Major League Baseball fans, Brewers fans. Brewers have obviously been very active at the trade deadline in the last couple years, so there's a lot to watch for. So I wanted to make sure that we gave it suitable treatment, because Wednesday is the day when teams have to make trades. If they want those guys on their postseason roster with no August trade deadline, it has to happen by July 31st, by the end of business. It has to happen, or players will simply not be part of a playoff roster if they get traded after that. So obviously this is a big deal. Hopefully it's a fun one. If something huge breaks, hopefully we'll have an emergency podcast that breaks that down a little bit. But other than that, this is the last you'll hear from us for another week. Thanks for joining us on the Milwaukee Brewers Journal Sentinel podcast again. My name is J.R. Radcliffe. Find me on Twitter. Leave some feedback at J.R.R.A.D.C.L.I.F.F.E. You can also find me on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, or at jsonline.com. We will chat with you again soon. Thanks.
Stop.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.